Welcome to Movie Crush, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Movie Crush, Monday Mini Crush Edition. Very special two-part edition.
I know. The studio is very crowded today.
Yes.
Whoa.
Whoa. I forgot to do my vocal warm-ups. It's me, John Hodgman. I'm here.
That's right, everybody. John Hodgman is in the studio with us.
In case you were worried, he is here to save the Mini Crush
day. But you know what happened? I left for a second to go grab a free soda from the incredibly well-stocked refrigerator.
Yes.
Here at Stuff Media HQ.
Yeah.
When I came back, my chair was real low.
You can crank it up.
Yeah. What did you guys – is this a prank?
No, dude. You know what happened?
I'm cranking it up, but you pranked it up.
Every time you left, you would hop up and the chair would – the arm would raise the table and almost spill your coffee. So you can go back up now.
How do I crank it up?
You just pull the little thing.
I don't like this. I came down to Atlanta – on my own dime,
right,
to see my friend Chuck, and you too, Noel.
I appreciate that.
And do some movie crushing, and I'm getting hazed.
Well,
now you're getting hazed here.
This is a head game.
Yeah, it sure is.
Everyone's chair has got to be lower than mine.
I'm going to be off mic for a second. It's going to sound terrible.
You knew he was going to notice.
I think fix this chair.
It's right here.
Yeah, crank it up for me, Chuck.
Crank it up.
All right, let's crank it up.
So, John, I know you don't listen to the Mini Crushes, which is great because we've got some bits on here that are Hodgman-specific that I think everyone is going to enjoy.
I'm sorry that I don't listen to them.
You don't have to be sorry.
But it's sort of like a deal that I have with my readers. You know, I have a new book coming out, Medallion Status. Mm. And it's a great book of funny stories about me being somewhat famous and then losing that fame and trying to make up for it by chasing diamond medallion status on Delta.
I'm approaching – what's the lowest status that you can get? Silver? Bronze?
Oh, don't even say silver.
No?
No.
I don't know. I don't understand how it works. You have to explain this to me or I should read your book probably.
The first level of medallion status in Delta's loyalty program is silver, then gold,
there
then
is
platinum.
Silver. So there's no bronze?
No.
Okay. Good to know.
But it's better to be nothing than silver.
Oh, God.
Silver's just a cruel joke.
So you get nothing.
Because silver doesn't get you shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
You can cuss on the show, by the way.
Well, okay. Silver is fucking a garbage medallion. It's not even a fucking garbage medallion. It's fucking a garbage medallion.
Well, I'm approaching said fucking garbage medallion, and I'm going to still take
it as a
personal
win. That's the first taste for free, right?
Yeah, that's
right. Then they suck you in. They want to be – but this book is really good, and you can pre-order it. I'm just saying at the top.
Yeah.
Get my plugs in at the top. bit.ly/medallion status, all one word, all capital letters.
Yep.
But here's the deal. It's just like podcasts. Just subscribe, right?
Sure.
If you
– subscribe to your book?
No, I'm just saying buy it. Well, look, if you read it, you'll enjoy it. If I listened to this, I would enjoy it.
Sure.
But the important thing is I subscribe.
You should have an installment plan where you subscribe and get a chapter a month.
No, I have an even better deal with my readers.
Okay.
If you buy the book,
it
frees you from the obligation to read it.
Okay. That's fair.
Buy the book. You don't have to read it.
I can't wait to read it because Vacationland was – and I told you this in private, but I thought it was a real achievement. And after your three books of fake facts, which was fun and I love them.
Thank you. So did I.
I really enjoyed seeing this new
honest.
Yeah, this new honest John.
Vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was very moving at times and very sweet and always funny, and I'm sure this is more of that.
Thanks, Chuck. Vacationland's the old book. Forget about it. Move forward. Nostalgia's a toxic impulse.
Oh, Jesus.
Medallion status. That's the new one. Upgrade to medallion status now. bit.ly/medallion status. What a pleasure to be here with you guys. Thank you so much for having me.
All right, John.
I won't talk about it ever again.
I doubt that.
We'll talk
about
it
on the next podcast.
Okay, fair.
We have a bit here that we do with Noel called Noel's Holes. And we're going to do Hodgman's Holes right now.
This does sound like hazing.
Wherein we have just compiled, while you went and got your Diet Coke, a 20-movie list.
Yeah.
Science fiction is what we're going with.
Yeah.
Where we are going to determine what your holes are.
Okay.
So all you have to do is give the affirmative that you've seen the film or not.
Okay.
Or the negative? No.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So the holes would be the gaps in my cultural education.
Exactly.
Yes. And we keep score. Ramsey, can you keep score? Ramsey thumbed it up.
Thumbs up, Randy. Ramsey.
And feel free to, you know, give us some musings about said film if you
Nope. Yes or no. That's all I'm
going
to do.
What? Oh, come on.
Do you really think you have to tell John to feel free to muse?
Fair.
I got a license to muse. Yeah.
That was the original Beastie Boys album title, but no one got it.
What, right.
So we're going to start off, John, with Metropolis.
I've seen it. I saw it. Fritz Lang's Metropolis.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because when I was a youth, they restored it and re-released it in theaters, including at the Coolidge Corner Theater.
Where you worked?
Yeah, but this is before I worked there. This is when I would just show up there to see samurai movies because I was a real cool 12-year-old.
You'd show up with your vest and your bow tie just hoping they would let you take tickets or something?
You know, kind of. And you know what else? It worked because that's what ended up happening. But the Coolidge Corner Theater, still there in Brookline, Massachusetts. At the time I was growing up, a great, great, great repertory movie house. Mm-hmm. And then it became a second run house, and it kind of suffered, but then it came back as an art house, which is what it is now. And somewhere in there, they released this new restored cut of Metropolis. I think they found footage. They may have colorized some of it. Stuff like that was happening, and commissioned all new music from Giorgio Moroder, king of the 80s soundtracks.
He's my favorite. Yeah,
with an incredible song by Queen, one of the last songs that Queen released.
How do you feel about this? Isn't this sort of revisionist, kind of like you're sort of remixing a classic and colorizing it and adding a new score? It's a little weird.
Yeah, I mean, it felt intrusive at the time,
right?
And also, the movie itself is a weird artifact, an interesting bit of film and science fiction history, and movie making cinema history. Right? Mm-hmm. I guess I said film earlier, so
sure.
Forget it.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I'm used too much. But I didn't find it particularly memorable. And I didn't find like putting a whole bunch of Giorgio Moroder gloss on it made it an enjoyable movie.
Got it.
But I like that Queen song. You know that song, Radio Gaga?
Sure.
They created that song for the soundtrack.
They were kings of the soundtrack for a while.
Well, they did Flash, right? Master of the Universe.
Save every one of us.
He's a miracle.
Just a man with a man's courage.
All we hear is Radio Gaga, Radio Goo Goo. It was Freddie Mercury's ode to classic radio.
It's also where Lady Gaga got her name is from this.
Is it really?
It is. It is.
But I tell you what, doesn't this describe the podcasting world today? All we hear is Radio Gaga.
Very much so.
Well, I just made a connection.
All right, we got 19
and
more
Muse.
Of these to get through. 19 more of these to
I'm
get
not,
through.
I'm not leaving Atlanta.
Conclude Muse.
All right, number two, The Martian.
No.
Wait, is there an old Martian and a new Martian? Or is
no,
there
the
just
Martian, the
okay.
Matt Damon movie.
Okay.
No, I have no Muse.
Got it.
Number three. Solaris original.
Tarkovsky.
No, but I looked for a long time at the case at Movie Gallery in Greenfield, Massachusetts.
All right.
But opted no.
I fell asleep during both of them, the original.
I read
the
about
remake.
It and I felt like I did my job on that one.
I think that's fair.
All right, next, Solaris the remake.
No.
Okay.
Was that a Soderbergh?
Mm-hmm. It was. Mm-hmm. You worked with him.
And I think it's a shot-for-shot-ish kind of remake as well.
Yeah. I read about that one. I'm like, hard pass. I've seen the restored cut of Metropolis. I've been tricked into this before.
Exactly.
Somebody's weird art project does not mean I have to go see the movie.
Are you a Tarkovsky fan at all? Are there any of his films that you enjoy?
Never got into it.
I really like Stalker. That's one that I saw
I
pretty recently.
There was Solaris and that was it.
No. Well, he's got a bunch. He's got Andrei Rublev, which is a big period piece, big sweeping thing.
That used to be advertised in the Coolidge Corner little pamphlet that they would print out. Like, here's what's coming this week. And I would go, I'm not seeing that.
It's fair. The next one, Silent Running.
Yes. Of course, I've seen Silent Running.
Is that the same as Cool Runnings?
No.
No, okay. No. Silent Running, is that sort of like a Bruce dystopian Dern, future thing,
Bruce,
kind of?
Bruce Dern yeah. is on a deep he's a gardener on a garden spaceship.
Got it. Okay.
Earth has been, you know, gone through climate change.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they sent out these different spaceships to preserve different kinds of plant life.
Got it.
Presumably for the idea that they're going to redo the Earth eventually
sure.
or something.
Yeah.
So he's on there with a bunch of jocks. He's the gardener and a bunch of really cute – or I think two really cute robots
mm-hmm.
who walk around and waddle. They look like Wally if Wally walked around.
Got it.
Right? Very, very, very impractical way to build a robot. And then he gets the word from Earth, time to blow up the gardens. We're not going to use them. And he refuses to do it and stops the jocks and then he's alone on this ship.
Because it's his own little personal Eden kind of, right? Or something.
Yeah, and just... also it's sort of like it's been a while since I've seen it, but I can't fathom what the explanation would be for blowing up the garden ships.
Right. Just let it be.
Yeah, just let it keep going. Right. Too expensive? I don't know.
I have it right here. Lowell rebels when he's ordered to destroy the greenhouse in favor of carrying cargo. So get rid of all those plants. We need to put some fucking cargo on there.
Right. And the plants are in these big solarium pods. Mm.
That's perfect for cargo.
Who knows? I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those science fiction movies that's much more allegory than it is story.
Mm-hmm.
Or sort of eco-warning, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great. And it was John Dykstra directed, I believe.
Douglas Trumbull.
Douglas Trumbull, right. He's a different science, different special effects master craftsperson. He did the Star Wars stuff, and this was his directorial thing.
Interesting.
So maybe I'm confusing Dykstra again, but anyway.
Screenplay by Michael Cimino and Stephen Bochco, the
yeah.
TV guy.
Yeah, Bochco was around for a long time.
You know who young Bruce Dern looks like on this poster here? He looks like Josh Clark.
He does.
Look at this, Chuck. Isn't that eerie?
Oh, he kind of does, actually.
In that one poster,
in this one image,
running.
Yeah, his hair is kind of cropped out. Because I think he has a bushy mane of, yeah. like, mullety hair.
Kind and this of. Actually was before Star Wars, because I remember that there was accusations that the two cute robots, Huey and Louie, were sort of an inspiration for R2-D2.
Huey and Louie?
That was his nickname for
him. Got
them.
It, got it.
Yeah,
they're
72.
Two, yeah.
All right, next film, Soylent Green.
Yes, of course.
It's apparently people.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Next movie.
I guess that one's spoiled.
Yeah, well.
The original Westworld film.
Yes, I have seen it with Yul Brynner.
Okay. The film Moon.
Yes.
With Sam Rockwell.
Sam Rockwell, directed by Duncan Jones.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
My friend on Twitter.
Okay.
He's a really nice guy.
Next, we have the classic Jane Fonda film, Barbarella.
Of course I've seen it.
We have the classic Jane Fonda science fiction film, On Golden Pond.
I have all, really? That's science fiction? Was the Golden Pond actually in a pod on Bruce Dern's spaceship?
That's right. It was on Golden Pod.
Katharine Hepburn and Henry Fonda have to take a shuttle out there? That would be a real sort of new Westworld retake on Golden Pond.
Get on the shuttle, you old poop.
The airlocks, Henry. Do you hear it? The airlocks. The loons. The loons is the famous line. That's what I'm referencing.
Yeah.
I don't think people see On Golden Pond anymore.
Oh, man. I love that movie. That was a big HBO movie for me.
That was one that was heavy rotation in culture and now gone.
Gone.
Got Mad About You'd.
Oh, wow.
People don't think about Mad About You anymore.
I don't think Chuck had until this exact moment.
Yeah.
Now they are rebooting Mad About You finally. You know, but after decades of Seinfeld and Friends nostalgia,
uh-huh.
they're finally rebooting Mad About You, but that's
– Rebooting as in showing the old show or
– No, restarting it, doing it again.
Jeez.
But that's purely through the – I think the force of will of Paul Reiser.
Right.
Who, by the way, is an incredible actor.
Sure.
And a great guy.
Yeah.
Just letting you know. But he should have gotten 7 Emmys for Red Oaks and
didn't see that.
Robbed. So
next
film. I was there at the American Comedy Awards when Chris Rock crafted a joke making fun of Paul Reiser.
What? Chris Rock's going to be in the new season of Fargo, which I'm pretty excited about.
Still haven't seen any of Fargo.
The TV show is so good.
Yeah. I saw a little of the first one.
Well, the seasons two and three were. Yeah.
There's a three?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I saw two.
Ewan McGregor.
Noah Hawley, right?
Yeah.
And he made Legion.
Oh, okay.
Which I love. And I think he's incredibly talented. But I would say the first season of Fargo was just a little – you know what the problem was? It was a little bit just too much wearing the movie clothes.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was just kind of – it wasn't going in new directions at first. The Billy Bob Thornton was great in it.
Yeah.
But
the second one was totally not like that, though. It was very
season
much
two was
thing.
Jesse Plemons and Kirsten Dunst and Gene Smart. It was
so
fucking
good.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's and season three was Ewan McGregor – in a dual role
as
twins.
Yeah.
It was really, really good.
But why am I blanking on this person's name? Bilbo Baggins, not Ian Holm.
Oh, what's
the
his
office.
Name? The office guy.
You know who I mean.
Yes.
Fargo, season one. Black Panther.
Sherlock.
The office? Who did he play on The Office?
He was the Jim character.
He was Jim.
Only
he
his
was,
name wasn't Jim.
Oh. His name was Tim.
Tim. That's right.
Oh, the original Office?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the guy.
You know,
people are screaming at their devices right now.
I was recording a podcast the other day.
Martin Freeman.
Martin Freeman is one of the greats. Love Martin Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
Love him in Sherlock.
Mm-hmm.
Terrific. Everyone. The reason he gets cast and everything is because everyone loves him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He's got a very pleasant demeanor, and he's also very versatile.
Yeah, but. It's nothing to do with him. Take the job. He did a great job in Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like there are American actors.
Yeah, because he doesn't do a great accent either. Neither does Ewan McGregor.
We'll talk about this more when we talk about Endgame accents. But I just feel like on Movie Crush Main.
Sure.
But I just like come on, American actors. Let's get out there. Let's get these roles.
Yeah.
There are Midwestern actors.
Yeah.
And I don't think, let's try.
I want to flip this idea out to you guys. I heard a British actor being interviewed on NPR, and the interviewer said, so what's the deal with British actors being able to do American accents so well but not the other way around? And this British actor said, well, it's because we grew up steeped in American cinema, whereas Americans don't necessarily grow up steeped in, British culture.
Oh,
and
I disagree, sir.
Well, you're
I grew up watching Brian Blessed on I, Claudius. And let me tell you this. It was an education.
Gordon's alive!
That was exclusively for all the Brian Blessed heads out there.
I don't know who that
Blessed
is.
Brian Blessed?
No.
Well, first of all, he played, what's his name? King Hawk leader in Flash Gordon. From Flash.
Ming the Merciless?
No. He was the good guy. He was the I think they were called the Hawkman, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he was the one who shouted, Gordon's alive!
I may have never seen
very,
that
very, very famous
actually.
British character actor. Also voiced Boss Nass in The Phantom Menace. Next.
District 9.
Yep. Great.
Okay. Next. Beneath the Planet of the Apes.
I think that this is – yes, I have. That's the second one.
I don't know.
I think it's the one – where there are humans living underground who are weird.
Where's Dana Gould when you need him?
I know. Dana Gould, our podcast, a great podcast. Subscribe.
Next film, Dark Star.
No.
Okay.
It's a John Carpenter, it's like a lesser John Carpenter film. Or not lesser, whatever.
I just
haven't seen it. Ramsey flashed that one to me on the phone. I never even heard of it.
It was very much in my growing up science fiction-y ethos or ecosystem, it was known. It was a comedy, a science fiction comedy.
Oh.
And I gathered that it was a little bit of a – I kind of feel like it was a little bit of a stoner comedy. And I only think that that may be true because my older friend, who was a little bit of a stoner, was really into it.
Why haven't I seen it? Am I right?
And right, I know. It's like Radio Gaga out here in podcast land. Am I right?
I don't even know what that means.
I'm just connecting dad joke to dad joke. That's
74.
All.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of took it as I was a very good kid, so I didn't want to get near that stoner comedy.
You thought you might get high just by watching the movie.
I was a little worried about
it. Yeah, that's fair.
And it might need, maybe we should watch it tonight, Chet.
We could.
We should preview it a little bit. All right, cool. Go.
Next film, Destination Moon.
Is that the original?
I don't know what this is. Ramsey dug it up, I think.
That was me, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's from like the 50s. This is probably a low blow. I've never seen
it. But this is not Voyage to the Moon. This is not the Lumiere.
No. How dare you?
No, it's not. It's Destination Moon.
1950.
No.
Well, I don't know. You seem like
that's all right.
You seem like a guy that might have seen an obscure sci-fi movie from the 50s.
Who's in it? Did you ever see Angry Red Planet from that period of time?
No, but I love Heinlein novel, Red Planet?
Yeah, Angry Red Planet was a staple on Channel 56 afternoons when I was growing up in Brookline.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was a Creature Double feature on Saturdays.
Mm.
But Channel 56 all the same. 56 for life. Eat it, Channel 38. But the capsule review of Angry Red Planet in the TV guide, the description of it was, astronauts go to Mars, fight giant monsters, then head home.
That's the trajectory there. A lot of strong-sounding male leads in this movie. John Archer, Warner Anderson, yeah. Tom Powers, and Dick Wesson.
But one of the famous first films is the French silent film where they go the rocket to the moon and they land in the moon's eye.
Yeah.
Right. Go.
Ice Pirates. The Ice Pirates.
No, I never did. I never, ever did see that.
Okay.
I guess science fiction comedy doesn't work all the time. Robert Urich, Spencer for Hire.
Oh, sure.
Big celebrity in Boston.
Duracell battery salesman.
Better known for Spencer for Hire. Go.
I know you've seen this one. This is a gimme. You're welcome. Time Bandits.
Yes, of course.
All right, let's do a quick tally.
Did you think that someone who loves British character acting had not seen Time Bandits? I wonder if Brian Blessed's in Time Bandits. I'm going to look it up.
9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, I think it's 9-6.
It's pretty good.
Heading into the final five. John.
Yeah.
The Fly, The Orige.
Yes.
Okay. John.
I'm trying to find out if Brian Blessed was in Time Bandits. What?
The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes. There's that book. The woman who a woman wrote a nonfiction book about the woman who created the creature.
Right. We just did a little bit on her.
It's worth a plug.
Stuff You Should Know. Because she was famously fired for being a woman.
Right.
By this jerk guy. And the story didn't come out until much later. And so we're trying to...
Her name was Millicent Patrick.
Yes.
And the book about her life is The Lady from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
She designed the costume?
Yeah. Stuff You Should Know just did an episode on movie special effects, and we gave her due.
Mallory O'Meara is the author. Check it out. Next.
Cocoon.
Yeah, of course.
The other one with the old people?
Yep.
Okay.
Well, no, also Cocoon, too. So it's you could answer either way.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Next, the movie Zardoz.
Yes. Saw it at Paul F. Tompkins' house.
Oh, okay.
When I was
famous for that outfit.
Yeah, yes, and for its overall weirdness.
It's sort of a bathing suit thong situation where it's like a midriff exposed. And
Sean Connery.
Very hairy.
That poster, I mean, I'm grateful to the movie for giving us that image.
Right.
But the rest of all the other frames of the movie do not need to exist.
Really? They did a How Did This Get Made on it, which is a lot of fun.
All the other frames. Garbage.
They got one frame. That's good. You know what? Some people don't even get one frame. Some movies don't even get a frame.
That's fair.
And then finally, John.
Yes.
Number 20, Ex Machina.
No. I have not gotten around to seeing that, and
very,
I'm sorry.
Very good. Very good.
All right. Do we have a total, Ramsey?
Yep.
What do we got?
7 no's and 13 yeses.
All right. No. Anything over 50% means you win.
It's a win. Yeah.
Oh, good. Mm-hmm. That's good.
All right. Nice job.
Brian Blessed was not in Time Bandits. And if I were Brian Blessed, I would be very, very frustrated. Quintilius Vargas, where is my Time Bandits?
That's a great last name. Blessed.
Brian Blessed.
Oh, I know who this is.
Yeah,
of course.
You know. Of course you do.
Of course I do. Yeah.
All right, we're going to move on to a social studies segment.
Social Studies on Movie Crush.
Yes.
And John, this is where I get on the Movie Crush Facebook page and I pose a question to the listeners, to the Movie Crushers, and then we read some of their stuff and then you guys chime in with your own answers as well. And
let me like the Movie Crush Facebook page.
Oh, you bastard. You haven't liked it yet.
Well, I'm not a –
I just did it.
I don't live in the Facebook world that much, and I'm looking at it now. And
oh,
I
look,
don't...
confetti just went off on my screen when you liked it.
Oh, yeah. Hooray.
All right, John. I asked the Movie Crushers this very simple question. Who is your favorite MCU hero and why?
Uh-huh.
Do you have yours already, or do you want to think about it?
Yep, I got it.
All right, well, we'll get to you both in a second. Let me go through some of these. Old friend John Millsap says, Tom Holland's Spider-Man is Stan Lee's creation right off the page. Perfect teen energy.
Delete that question, not the MCU.
Oh, John Millsap.
As of very recently, no longer.
Yeah.
Sorry, John.
Yeah, you're right, technically.
Sony got greedy. Let's take it back.
Top fan and oldest of pals, I'm going to say it right this time, Alex Glasnovich. I think Bruce Banner by Mark Ruffalo is the most fleshed out and empathetic hero out there in these movies.
Also the most fleshy. See what I did there? Because he's shirtless a lot. Sorry.
I thought you were fat-shaming Mark Ruffalo because he has a normal body.
No, no. The Hulk is fleshy. He's green and fleshy.
Rob Kriegel says Thor, one of the most powerful characters, still looks for redemption and after seeming failure.
Yeah, great arc. Great arc.
And it's a character, too, that I was like, this is going to be goofy. How are they going to do this? And they made it delightful.
Yeah.
He's so funny.
Boy, he's great.
He's everything you want in a character like that.
The first – I've never seen The Dark World.
Not great. Dark World.
I missed that one, but it didn't matter. There was a little bit where I was like, wait, what happened? How'd they get – who cares?
Right. And I've never – and as much as a
Ragnarok
MCR,
was a delight.
Yeah, well, that's when they clued into what the character is. He's comic relief. Mm-hmm.
And yeah. He really did evolve.
Yeah. And then changed again. We'll talk more about this on Movie Crush Main.
That's right. Old friend Andrew Ryan White says, Tony Stark, ultimate redemptive character.
Fair.
Hard to argue.
Everyone, you know what the MCU is good at? Arcs. Good arcs.
Yeah.
They got good arcs.
Mm-hmm.
Don Morris, old friend, says, Star-Lord, man. From the first second he danced across that screen. I mean, that shit was so funny, kicking those lizards and
– yeah.
And that was really good stuff.
You know, Guardians of the Galaxy let people know that there were going to be – that this is a big universe and there are going to be different kinds of movies in this shared universe and different moods and tones.
But man, he really shit the bed with Thanos though, man. He like overreacted and screwed everything up for everybody.
He really
was a short-sighted jerkwad.
I didn't know that Noel was the internet because – yeah, people got mad at that.
It was annoying because I liked the character so much.
He
just overdid it. And it was a device. I get that. But it bothered me because I didn't think the character.
No, it wasn't. I think that's what makes Marvel movies good is that the characters are fallible and he really screwed up. Really, 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 really screwed up.
Do you think he owned up to it? Did he feel like he owned it in the next movie? I can't even remember. He was dead to me.
It's not mentioned. It does not come up.
Okay. Yeah.
And I don't know that he learned anything from it. But we didn't spend much time with him.
That's fair.
No,
he wasn't
in much of it.
But it was. But yeah, that moment is supposed to be that enervating and angrifying. You know, one of those is a word.
It was.
Shannon Redding McQueen says, Nick Fury, so mysterious and secretive. Love seeing some of the backstory in Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm. That was fun.
Old friend Kevin Herbon says, I love how MCU lets the little guys be heroes, too. The old guy in Germany that wouldn't kneel for Loki.
Yeah.
The S.H.I.E.L.D. tech and Winter Soldier that wouldn't launch the helicarriers even with a gun to his head.
Yeah.
Nice tidbits there.
Regular human heroics.
Do you have one? Who is yours?
A human hero or my favorite?
Favorite MCU hero.
Oh.
Did you forget where you were for a minute?
No, but we were talking about the ordinary humans who stood up to power in the MCU.
No, I mean the main question here.
Captain America.
Oh, okay. Why?
Well, Captain America was not a character that I cared about at all as a comic book reader.
Same.
Very, very hard character to get a beat on. If you look at the history of Captain America, you know, he wavers between the propaganda patriotism of the era in which he was born and created in World War II by Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, to a more self-reflective Captain America in the 1970s who questions the value of patriotism in itself.
Yeah.
post-Watergate, Captain America in the comics went off and gave up being Captain America to become Nomad for a period of time, a person without a country. Mm, see the name? Uh-huh. And all of these arcs were reflected in the MCU Captain America. But one of the thing that the comic book character never had in order to ground all of these takes on Captain America and make it one whole human person that you cared about was Chris Evans.
Boy, he's good.
And Chris Evans, you know, when he was cast as Captain America, I had seen him in half a Fantastic Four movie when he was the Human Torch.
Right.
And he was great in that movie, but he was like young hotshot.
I'm
like,
sure.
How could this guy ever be Captain America?
Right. And boy, did he own it.
He created a whole human being that you care about.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I cared about that character in my long history of comics. And he had to do it from this template that you know, there is Spider-Man, Peter Parker straight off the page, right? There is Tony Stark straight off the page, although I think obviously Robert Downey Jr. brought a lot of new elements to Tony Stark.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Thor, no one knew who he was, and he was a total cipher of a character. It wasn't until movies later that they locked in on, oh, he's the tragicomic relief.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They made him the comic relief, then they made him the tragic relief, and that was amazing.
Yeah.
And Chris Hemsworth was awesome at it. And Quill is Quill, and everyone's great. Captain America was Captain America from the beginning. You believed in who he was at the start, and you followed his journey, and it felt completely consistent. And I just thought it was a triumph to make as bland a character as that interesting.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is an element of what the whole MCU is. Like, they translated something from the page to the screen in a way that no one had done it before.
Yeah.
With a mix of taking it seriously, taking it lightly, reimagining, being honoring, you know, honoring the source material, but messing with it when they had to. And appreciating they need to be real human beings.
Not to mention the insane continuity and crossover and the whole way it weaves together and the post credits.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's a feat.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal.
Yes, absolutely. So that was I'll watch any frame of any movie with Chris Evans as Captain America in it.
Noel, you got one? Who's your favorite hero?
I like Thor a lot. I'm not a big Marvel guy. Like, I've came to this largely from the movies.
Mm-hmm.
I read, like, Watchmen and more, like, the Vertigo kind of comics and Sandman and stuff, but I was never really a Marvel loyalist. So I'm learning all of these character arcs from the movies.
I didn't read comic books at all, except for Richie Rich and Archie.
Got it.
So, true.
How do you feel about Riverdale?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you got to check that out.
I heard it's good.
It's interesting.
I'm going to go with Thor, I think, and Cap.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are my guys.
Yeah.
Hard to not pick those two.
What does Sony think they're doing, stealing?
Blonde white males. I get it.
What do they think they're going to do, stealing Spider-Man back? Like, all the Sony Spider-Man movies suck. Like, I mean, okay, maybe the early ones, I guess, with Tobey
Maguire. Those were good.
A
couple of them were.
But then they lost their way with the other dude. And then immediately when the Marvel one came out, they were great. And now what are they going to – like, how are they going to do it?
I completely understand why Sony wants Spider-Man back because they – first of all, they own him.
Well, sure.
You know, so he was on loan to the MCU. And when they loaned him to the MCU, they had nothing to lose and everything to gain because the MCU was – you know, Disney, Marvel Studios were clearly creatively on the right track.
Right.
They knew what to do and they knew a way to execute it. And Sony had no plans. And they had just – come off of the total feces show of the making of and releasing of Fantastic Four.
Right.
So they had no faith in their own creative enterprise. And they're like, why not take this money? That makes perfect sense because we don't know what to do with this character. But then on accident almost, they didn't realize they were about to release – the greatest Spider-Man movie of all time.
Right.
Which is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which is...
I love it.
As...
So great.
It's one of the most beautiful, well-constructed, thrilling... Like, it's thrilling as a movie. It's thrilling as what it represents for storytelling in animated movies. I mean, it's such an incredible feat.
Wait, that was Sony?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. That's what they did instead.
Oh.
They gave Spider-Man to MCU, but then... I really want to do justice to the filmmakers because it was
first Spider-Verse.
Yeah. So hang on one second.
Sure.
I can't get enough of that spider ham.
It's great.
It's so funny.
And that's Mulaney.
That's John Mulaney.
John Mulaney. That's what I said last night after 9 martinis.
So it's co-directed by Peter Ramsey, Rodney Rothman, and Bob Parrischetti.
Amazing.
And Rodney, we have friends in common from back in the old McSweeney's days. So I was like, go team.
Right.
But Peter Ramsey is an incredible filmmaker. And, you know, he's a person of color, making a superhero movie about a person of color.
Right.
In a way that is not at all provocative, just exciting.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden, Sony realizes they're sitting on this brain trust that know how to make Spider-Man movies.
You answered my question. I had no idea.
I mean, this is all speculation.
But I think it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I think they expected Into the Spider-Verse to just go off into the night and go straight to video or whatever.
Yeah.
Because it's an animated movie and
it looked like that upon first glance. Like when I saw the trailers, I was like, oh, it's a cute little Spider-Man cartoon.
Right.
And then it was this powerhouse psychedelic Marvel. You know, I thought it was fantastic.
Yeah, so I think they're feeling their – and they had the success with Venom too, which I did not see, but apparently did very well. So like, hey, we own the whole Spider-Verse.
Right.
Let's get our marquee character back and
and
deal with it. And I think it's really it's very bittersweet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, John.
I've never felt sadder about corporate infighting.
Yeah. Right. Oh, the Cola Wars didn't do it for you?
Pepsi versus
– Yeah, versus Coke.
Look, it's not just because I'm in Atlanta. Fuck Pepsi.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, Pepsi. Good.
All right, John, we're going to finish today with a comic card. This is where we take
– If I go into a restaurant and it's a Pepsi restaurant, I walk out.
Oh, yeah.
I at the very least roll my eyes super hard.
I do enjoy a Diet Mountain Dew from time to time.
Oh, yeah? Is that a Pepsi product?
Yeah, Mountain Dew is a Pepsi product, and I do enjoy a Diet Mountain Dew from time to time, especially the bodega at the end of my street in Brooklyn. Sometimes has them in cans, and it's just like a great day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We finished with comment card, which is questions from the listeners, and I told them you were coming on, and so we have some Hodgman-specific questions.
I can't wait.
And we're going to take a few of those.
Who is John Hodgman? John Hodgman is the author of Medallion Status, coming up October 15th.
That's
new
right.
Book
pre-order.
John Hodgman. Pre-order. bit.ly/medallionstatus. Go.
Nick Kelly, old pal, says, John, does seeing friends of yours in a movie take you out of the movie or make you feel more invested? I think it's a really good question.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned John Mulaney as the voice of Peter Porker, the spectacular Spider-Ham in Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And John and I know each other.
Mm-hmm.
We've never hung out, but we used to run in the same comedic circles years ago before he hit it real big.
Right.
And he was very kind, and he and Nick Kroll had me on their Oh Hello Broadway run
A
guest, which was a treat. He is by far one of the nicest people in the world, and yet when I see him or anyone I know on screen, it absolutely takes me out of the movie. It's like, why did they get that job? Right. I'm around. And it doesn't matter what the job – like I could be completely wrong for the job. And I'm like, oh, John Mulaney gets another – but I do have a funny voice. I do have lots of funny voices. I was on Adventure Time.
Venture Brothers.
Venture Brothers. Do voices. I was in Coraline. I was the father and other father in Coraline.
That's
God damn it.
Who were you on Adventure Time? I love Adventure Time.
I was the king of the blob. I was.
You don't even remember?
No, the king of the slime kingdom.
Yes. That's okay. Right. Got it.
The slime king.
Yep.
And yet, for all of the deep professional jealousy, you know, as Gore Vidal said, it's not enough that you succeed. Your peers must suffer.
Right.
For all the dysfunctional professional jealousy that takes me out of movies, even Into the Spider-Verse was so good that even I couldn't get mad. I was so happy for John Mulaney, and he was so great in it, obviously. So,
all right, old pal Michael Griffith, on that note, John.
Are they all your old pals?
Huh? You get old pal status if
– Oh, it's a status – It's a loyalty program within the Movie Crush universe.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I thought they were just all your friends from high school.
No. These are old pals, people that are really active.
How do you earn the old pal status?
You answer, you know, you get involved on the Facebook stuff, and I recognize your name after it appears over and over. So,
on Delta Airlines, you can buy Diamond Medallion status at the end of the year for thousands of dollars. Could I do that? Could I get old pal status?
Sure.
On your – okay.
old pal Michael Griffith.
Right, says.
Says this, John, I'd like to know what your favorite voiceover work that you've done has been.
Just talking about it.
Personally, I'm a fan of your work in The Venture Brothers.
Well, thank you very much. I'm not, because that character, Snoopy, on Venture Brothers, while I'm an enormous fan of Venture Brothers and Doc and Jackson Public who make it, that voice sounds too much like me. And so my own self-loathing kicks in and I don't like it.
Gotcha.
But recently I've had the extreme pleasure of working for Disney on the new DuckTales.
Oh, cool.
And there's a character that I voiced in season 2 called John D. Rocker Duck, who was created by Carl Barks. Oh, never mind. He was a member of the original DuckTales comic strip universe.
Uh-huh.
A rival billionaire to Scrooge McDuck. But then they kind of got dropped from American comics and no one ever remembered him except for the Italians, where he became a huge character. And in Europe, a lot of those Scrooge McDuck comics in Europe were written in Italy, and Rocker Duck became this big character, this iconic character in Italy and throughout Europe as a result. But he had never been animated before. And so I was the first person to ever voice this character. So it was very exciting for me.
So you got to originate.
I got to originate the voice of John D. Rocker Duck.
That's great.
Who is this historic character within this world that people care about.
What was the voice? Do it.
Well, hi.
Is that it?
No. It's like, I'm John D. Rocker Duck. You can't put up your dukes. You know, mad billionaire.
What did the Adventure Time character sound like? Let's run through these.
I think it was just me.
Okay.
But wait a minute. I'm dropping some news here on Movie Crush Minis.
Yeah?
It's now been revealed that John D. Rocker Duck survived and will return in season 3.
Nice.
Yeah. As part of FOWL, the evil organization, F-O-W-L, FOWL.
Nice.
What does that acronym stand for?
Friend of Wildlife Lands.
Got it. It's important.
No, I don't remember.
It's like WWF.
Fiendish something.
We do want to shout out Karma Hamadi, because she did ask what you thought of Spider-Man leaving the MCU. So we'll consider that answered. But
it's a real drag.
Yeah.
It's a real drag.
It's fiendish organization for world larceny, mm-hmm. which is classically good.
Yeah.
Let me see. Let's do a couple more here, and then we'll wrap this one up. I had a good one.
But yeah, I liked doing Rocker Duck because he didn't sound like me. And it felt like acting. I liked that.
All right, John, here's one. This is from one of the oldest of pals, Debbie Frangadakis.
Hi, Debbie.
John, do you think movies accurately portray Ivy League college life?
What movie? So Debbie knows that I attended Yale University. That's an accredited four-year institution in Southern Connecticut.
So, you know, what's out there? Paper Chase?
Never saw it.
School Ties?
Never saw it.
Remember that one with Brendan Fraser?
Oh, yeah. That's a Harvard one, right?
I think so.
Yeah, and Soul Man is Harvard, too.
Oh, good Lord.
How
accurate was Soul Man?
Let's just say it accurately portrayed its times and how we thought about race at that time.
Yeah, that's true. All right, I'm looking at Ivy League movies. The Skulls.
The Skulls is loosely based...
On the Skull and Bones, right?
On the Skull and Bones Senior Secret Society at Yale, where supposedly if you get tapped into Skull and Bones, you are initiated into a worldwide secret world government or something.
Now, you're supposed to do a guest spot on my other show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know Later, where supposedly you're going to tell a story about happening upon one of these types of meetings. So scoop us here.
I don't happen upon it. I was invited.
Well, that's fantastic.
It was not Skull and Bones.
Okay.
It was Book and Snake.
Fair. Oh.
That's a tease.
Okay.
That's a tease.
Love it. Listen
check out. Yeah.
Do it.
It was Chicken and Waffles.
Yeah. Chicken and Waffles.
The secretist society.
The thing that I flashed in my mind was Indiana Jones and the Temple of the Crystal Skulls.
Oh, yeah.
Palooza or whatever, and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls.
Uh-huh.
Because that's supposedly set, like there's a whole motorcycle chase scene at his college, which is supposed to be, I think, Princeton, but they shot it at Yale.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I enjoyed seeing that campus because you don't see it often on film. So that was the most accurate portrayal of Yale, I would say.
Got it. Motorcycle chase.
Yeah. At least you get to see the Lenonia and Brothers room in Sterling Memorial Library, a place where I took many a naps. Many a naps.
All right. We'll finish up with, once again, with old pal Alex Glasnevich. John, and could be Noel as well, and me. What's a movie that you can't wait to share with your kids when they're adults but are too young for now? Your kids are older, so they can probably see most anything, right?
Yeah, but I had that experience for sure.
What was one of the big ones for you?
I remember showing my daughter The Brood by David Cronenberg around Halloween.
Nice.
That was a big one for me.
Okay.
Rosemary's Baby also was one. Now that's my daughter's favorite movie.
That's really a hole for me. I haven't seen Rosemary's Baby.
But I did not show her Rosemary's Baby because, like, there are lots of movies now. So our daughter is 17. Our son is 14. You know, I remember, like, for my son, it's like, yeah, go see our movies. I don't care. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's good to see movies that are a little bit above your pay grade in terms of language, content. Like,
I agree.
It's I remember seeing movies where I was like, I'm not sure I should be seeing this. And that kind of opens up some thinking about stuff.
I think it also isn't like an instant license to, like, be a bad kid or something.
Right. No.
It all depends on how it's handled by the parent.
Right.
And if it's this awful secretive thing, they're much more likely to sneak off and do it anyway and then rebel by doing the things
they
see.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And, you know, like I showed him I, Claudius, the 1976 BBC miniseries.
He loves it, right?
And he loves I, Claudius. And that has nudity and sexual content in it. And, like, the production values are very low. So it's like a bunch of British character actors pretending to have an orgy. Orgy. A bunch of British character actors pretending to have an orgy in a rec room made out of cardboard. It's not very sexy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, like, I want him to see Midsommar, the Ari Aster movie.
Sure. Because mm-hmm.
I think it's one of the greatest movies I've ever seen.
Okay.
And
I need to revisit that. We were both mixed about it.
Yeah, a lot of people are mixed about it. I am not.
Yeah.
But, like, and I would have no problem if he snuck over to see Midsommar on his own at the Nighthawk Theater in Prospect Park. But I don't want to sit through that sex scene with him there.
Right.
You know
that's
I mean?
True.
I forgot about that.
And, like, my daughter a year or two ago was watching Call Me By Your Name, which has some
great
hugging
movie.
And kissing. Mm-hmm. And it's a great movie. And that was sort of where I was like, I articulated that feeling of like, it's not that it's inappropriate for you. It's totally appropriate for you, mm-hmm. as it is for me. I'm a grown person.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't want to be watching this movie together.
Yeah. Both of our sakes.
Yeah, you don't want to have your dad watching this movie with you.
Right.
I will excuse myself and go up to bed.
Indeed. Dare we say recuse.
Mine I'm really looking forward to is obviously E.T. and The Goonies is really the big one that I can't wait to show Ruby.
Yeah.
E.T. could do pretty early.
Yeah, I think she's close.
Yeah.
What year did E.T. come out?
I want to say 82 or 83.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. So, I was 11.
We were the perfect age because we were the age of—
Did you cry when E.T. died?
I'm sure I did. I do now.
I got close.
More than I would have then.
I'm weepy. I was so, as I discussed in my book, Medallion Status— bit.ly/medallion status, True Stories from Secret Rooms, upgrade now.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't cry ever during my childhood. And it was not a point of pride.
Interesting.
I got nervous that something was wrong with me.
Right.
So I felt a little bit of relief when I got close, when I got a little misty.
Yeah. What about now? Are you more emotional now with stuff?
Yes. Well, it comes up in the context of an audition for a play in the role, and I had to cry on command on stage. It was one of those actory things that I had never done before and was terrified of, especially since I had this problem in my life, which I didn't cry.
Because you're a sociopath?
Well, so, yeah. I mean, so I had formulated a theory as a child to explain my weirdness in this regard and in general, which is, well, maybe I'm an android. Maybe I'm incapable of tears.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were a sociopath, so for the stage play— the way you got to cry was you thought about not killing people.
Oh.
And that made you so sad.
No, but what I hadn't appreciated was that between seeing E.T. in 1982 or three or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and 2015 when I was auditioning for this role, time had passed, and my mom had passed away,
mm-hmm.
and I had had kids, and the kids were getting older and were disappearing before my
eyes.
You
had some shit to draw from.
And I didn't realize that I had this shit to draw from, and the minute I was rehearsing my lines, walking down the street, the minute I hit that line, burst into tears immediately, sobbing, racking tears.
Wow.
It was intense. And I was great because, A, I knew I could do it, and, B, like, my neighbors on the street didn't want to talk to me, which is great. And I went into the audition, and the woman who wrote the play, Hallie Pfeiffer, was like – and I was nervous that I couldn't do it again. And I did it again. It's like, boom, tears, huge tears. And Hallie was like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm fantastic.
You said, this is the first time I fucking cried. I'm 44 years old.
It's been such a liberation. And that's when I realized that my superpower is – I'm like Bruce Banner in Avengers.
Yeah, you're always
crying. The secret is I'm always crying. At any moment, I can just turn around and stare down the Chitauri invading army and just be like,
oh, that's good.
Yeah.
All right, everyone. That's all the time we have for this week. Thanks to John for being here. Pre-order Medallion Status, bit.ly/medallion status.
bit.ly/ all capital letters, MedallionStatus. I probably could have made that easier if I was shortening the URL anyway.
Probably could.
John Book.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
Buy me.
I'll never. That's right. Buy me. You don't have to read me.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.
This was fun. Bye, old pals.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.